Hi, this is Dr. Beth Pfeiffer with Gray Sand Pfeiffer, age 14. It's November 25th, Sunday night, 7:41. I always have my students participate in the Great Thanksgiving Listen, and in the past I've interviewed my parents. So this year I've asked Grace to interview me. I'm almost 50 now. I'll be 50 on December 14th this year. And so here we go.
All right, so first question. What was the saddest moment of your life?
Wow. Start with anything.
I like them dark.
Don't play Despacito, Alexa. Probably when my grandma died, Mary, whose house this is. Mm-hmm. Mary Sterniglia. Maiden name Pizzolatto, because I never knew my other grandma, because my mom's mom, Elsie Johnson, Elizabeth Johnson, died when she was 19. They named me after her. So I always had my grandma Mary, the Sicilian one, that grew up in Louisiana and then came to Chicago with my grandpa, Sam Salvatore. And originally, I started living here at 4554 North McVicker when my grandma could no longer be in this house because she couldn't walk anymore, and these old bungalows, the doors were too narrow for the wheelchair, and she just was really getting hard to care for her here. And we had hired people to live with Grandpa to help care for her, but it just was getting to be too much. So then we found Norwood Park home, and so they were there. My grandpa was in a higher functioning floor because even though he was much older, he was doing better than she was. But then eventually, about less than a year after Anthony and I got married, all my grandparents were gone. My grandma, even though she was in worse physical shape, and she was more on a hospital kind of floor at the nursing home. That's the nursing home that I took you to that we played bingo with the residents and made cards for them. I used to take Muffy to visit there, my golden retriever. Well, surprisingly, I was living here because we always thought Grandpa would survive, outlive Grandma, and would want to come move back home. So I was taking care of the house in case he would come back. But actually, ironically, and I guess this sometimes happened because he was the more healthy caregiver, he wound up actually, well, he was much older than her, too. He wound up passing away at the age of 96 before her, and then she basically, you know, when they were so in love, they'd been married, I think, like 67 years. You can see the dates on that cross stitch. February 27th.
What's the year? Ages ago.
Yeah.
I think
1933.
1933. Yeah, that's as old as Grandpa Pfeiffer.
So that's when they got married in New Orleans. Well, anyway, so they were so, you know, one of those couples that's so much a couple that she didn't last. I think she lasted less than 3 months after he died. And then, she, of course, she followed him. So that was really, really, really sad for me. You know, I was very close to them. And, you know, we just hadn't even gotten over losing him. And then, you know, we lost her. But they had really great lives, and I don't regret any of it. I don't regret, you know, visiting them in the nursing home a couple times a week and just seeing them change at every stage. You're going to make me cry on the first question.
Yeah.
Because we were so close, that was really, really hard, because then they were both gone. So it was like, really, like, I was still grieving him. Okay, start with a happy question.
Oh, my God. I hate you with that. I would ask what's your happiest moment, but I think I know that.
Yes, what's my happiest moment?
Hi. I love
the birth
you
of my child.
Right.
Now, I got to say, I was born in Lutheran General Hospital in Park Ridge. I was the only child that my parents, like, actually planned and were looking forward to. It's true.
And then
they were really excited to have a daughter, and I felt the same way. I I did everything I could to have a healthy pregnancy. I took every class that Lutheran Journal offered, infant CPR, prenatal water exercise class, prenatal yoga, all the breastfeeding classes, you name it. I wouldn't let anybody smoke around me. I gave up chocolate. I gave up hot dogs.
You gave up hot dogs.
I gave up everything. And I just really enjoyed my pregnancy and growing you. It was just, I remember everything about it vividly, like, even in, like, my water bag tour. So, and then you have to beat the clock because they're afraid of infection. So I really wasn't ready. And you weren't ready either, but ready or not. So they gave me some Pitocin, and they said, oh, go walk around the halls and see if that speeds things along.
21 hours later.
Yeah, I was doing laps in the hallway, and there was a lot of children's art. I still remember it. These kids had made, like, Baba Black Sheep out of cotton balls, and I still remember everything I was reading on the walls as I was doing my laps.
I bet you were crying a lot, weren't you?
No, I was scared, but I was excited. And I had hired a doula, and I had a birth plan because I didn't want you to have any drugs. And I had written in my birth plan that if it came down to saving your life or mine, that they should let me go and save you. And even Dad approved of that one.
Okay.
And I remember one of the nurses were the greatest. They were really, and my anesthesiologist was really great. One of the nurses was telling me, she was from like a Soviet bloc country. And she was telling me about how, you know, how hard it was for her first pregnancy because she was trying to eat healthy for the baby, but you'd have to stand in lines
mm-hmm.
for food and for they would fairly distribute things in their system. And so she wanted their governmental system, so she would want fruit for the baby. And she says she remembers, like, crying, like, trying to stand in line when she was really pregnant just so she could get some fruit for the baby. And I never forgot that, like, how blessed I was that I was able to really have my prenatal vitamins and eat so healthy for you and do everything I could so that you would be healthy. And then it made me think about how in other countries, no matter how much they might want to, it's really kind of out of their control. Like they do the best they can, but their babies might not be as healthy as we can be. You know, it's really unfair. So I was thinking about that. And it was the happiest day of my life. And then, so we had 28 hours of labor. And then they said, oh, yeah, you're stuck at 9 centimeters. You know, her heart rate's starting to get a little dicey. This could go on forever. You're already exhausted. So we're going to go in and get her. So then you were so perfect and so pink. And I was so out of it, though, because they gave me so many drugs. And when they were like, because I had kept on having dreams that you were a boy. And I was going to name you Robert Lawrence after your grandparents. So then when they said to me, I was expecting them to say, it's a girl or it's a boy. And then when they said, it's a daughter, I couldn't process it. I was like so shocked. And then I was so happy when I finally figured it out.
Got a name in Lawrence over here.
Thanks to Amanda, she gave us a good name of grace.
All right. Who has been the kindest to you in your life?
Who's been the kindest to me in my life? Wow, that's
oof right there.
That's interesting. I mean, obviously, my parents. I think especially my dad. But what?
I got it.
What's wrong?
It's just something random.
Okay.
Sorry.
But there was, I want to say, becoming a teacher in CPS was really rough. First, people would tell me, oh, you have your doctorate, you're never going to get hired. You know, people were very negative. And when I was at Foreman High School, it wasn't a really good fit for me. It was very, very kind of toxic, dysfunctional space, which was tough. And it was like one time we had a big riot where they had to call 3 police departments. And, like, I found drugs on my homeroom floor and I had a girl that kept on having seizures, and nobody was, you know, she wasn't getting the health care she needed, and I had gangbangers, and that's my students that were really, and drug dealers, and they were just coming to school to sell to the other students, Yeah, I mean, it's no joke. It was really tough.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that was just a shock to my system. It just wasn't so, not that I, it was very intense, you know, and so, my principal, who I didn't really like him, he was really not great, but anyway, he was kind of like quiet and he didn't tell people things. He didn't even talk to his department chairs and ask them for hiring decisions and stuff. He just did things really quietly and privately, which is weird for a really big school, but anyway, he had to decide if he was going to keep me the next year, then he would have to give me tenure. We're recording. We don't say it like that. Don't say it like that.
Sorry, Dad.
Hang on, honey.
Hang on, Dad.
You should have warned him that you were recording. That's our lovely... Yeah. Mm-hmm. No. Anyway. So, at the time, it was very devastating because I was really... doing everything I could to, you know, be a good teacher in that environment. And it really wasn't the best environment to be learning a new career, but, you know, you're like treading water. And so he decided not to give me tenure. And so luckily, coincidentally, Uncle Larry's friend and Daddy's friend, Mark, you know, Jean and Tom that live next to Grandma and Grandpa,
mm-hmm.
They're... son-in-law, who was an engineer at Von Steuben, he heard that his assistant principal, Brian Zare, was going to start a new high school, and he told Larry and Daddy that I should give him my resume. So that's how I wound up coming to Alcott, which was a much better fit for me. So, but at the time, I didn't know that was going to happen, and it was really devastating. To be like, no, we're not going to give you tenure and we think you should go somewhere else. And so there was a woman, I'm forgetting her name right now. It'll come to me. She was our IDS curriculum support person. So she was working for, not for the district, but for like an agency that was working with us to support us. And she was really, really nice to me when this all happened. And she like took me out to lunch and was like, you know, I've been around CPS and this just kind of happens. And, you know, she was just very supportive and like was like, don't worry, you'll land where you need to. And it was like, you know, she didn't have to do that. And it was like when you're at a really low point and it's somebody that you weren't really friends with or she wasn't a family who has to be nice to you. So it really meant a lot. So I'll think of her name in a minute. I'm just a little nervous. So.
Oh, that's all right. All right, next question. What is your favorite memory of me?
What's my favorite memory of you?
Yeah.
Wow.
Too many.
There's just so many.
Yeah.
Let me think. Well, you know, my favorite memories have to do with things like, you know, when you were nice to Baird when other people weren't, and if people would tease you, you didn't care. You know, you took the high road, you know. I was always proud of those kinds of stories.
I'm just thinking of, like, all the times you cried. Like, my confirmation, my communion, my graduation, all the crying moments.
All the crying moments. I,
Oh, you probably like taking me to Disney with Grammy and Grampy.
Oh, for sure. She outsmarted us all again. Like, we went to the park one day, and we were in this timeshare, so all of the buildings kind of looked the same. And we accidentally had the cab driver drop us off at the wrong building, only we didn't figure it out. And Grampy's, like, trying to get the key to work, and only Grace is like... hey, did they repaint the door? Like, even the 4-year-old realized we were at the wrong building when the rest of us are like, huh, did they change the locks? Like, I always knew she was going to be too smart for us. So, I don't know. I just have a lot of proud moments. I just feel very lucky to be your mom.
Oh, I love you too. All right. If you could hold on to one memory from your life forever, what would it be?
Wow. That's a tough one. There's a lot of them. I do think, I don't know why, but just for now, it's popping in my head, is my memories of visiting my Aunt Rita in New Orleans, Peshota, because the reason I got reconnected with her was always like a sore subject, because she was my Grandpa Sam's daughter from one of his first marriages that, you know, good Catholics never talked about. And my grandma was very jealous. Like, once they moved to Chicago, she didn't want him to have anything to do with his past life, which, like, it's a little touchy, and there's children involved. So my dad never grew up knowing his half-sister. And I didn't even, like, really realize, you know, how they were all related. And then when Dad and I got married, I had, you know, my grandma's address book, and I kind of knew, and I just decided, you know, I'm going to invite her. You know, I feel like, you know, she hasn't done anything, and I want to, and that's how our relationship started. And I'm glad she came, because she got to see Grandpa one more time before he passed, and it meant a lot to him. Grandma was kind of pissed off, but oh well.
Grandma was all pissed off.
And, you know, I just was doing some family history research, and so I went down to visit her in New Orleans, and then I went down there when her husband, Mike, died. Actually, she asked us to come 2 weeks after the funeral to help her, like, she would take her to the bank and all these kinds of things. And I just feel like I was very lucky, even though I only knew her for, like, 4 years. She was just a very loving, accepting person, and she wanted to have a relationship with us. I just wish it could have been longer, but I feel very, very lucky that I got to know her. She was sassy and funny and beautiful and just a wonderful person. And that's just one of the good memories. I'm really glad I got my dad to get to have more time with her and get to know her more because of me reaching out, which we had to give Dad credit too, because he was like, yeah, invite her.
All right. So, for your great-grandchildren listening to this years and years from now, is there any wisdom you'd want to pass on to them, and what would you like them to do?
Okay, give me the soapbox. I'm going to be just like Grampy. My wisdom is just, you need to put Jesus first. Your faith has to be number one. You just really, I can't emphasize it enough. We're not of this world. We live in it. Jesus sacrificed for us. He should be the most important thing in your life, and you need to listen to him and be in the Word. Pray that the Holy Spirit fills your life. Walk with him. Be a light to others in a dark world. I can't emphasize that enough. You don't. And I know it's hard. I know it's hard because in our culture, and even me, I value education. And they try to teach it out of you. They try to beat it out of you. And you know, the enemy is always trying to rob us of our joy. But it is so, so important. Because without God and your faith, you really have nothing. That's all I want to say. And I love you, and I'm proud of you.
Is there anything that you've never told me but you want me to know?
I think I'm pretty open with you.
Yeah.
I have never told you. I want you to know. I don't know what I just said there, that I just definitely want you to keep praying for the Holy Spirit. And I want you to keep praying for your future spouse, whoever that is, and your future children. And I think you pretty much know what I would want to say, that no matter what you do, I'd never be ashamed of you. I'd always love you unconditionally, even if you made that. We all make mistakes. I would always give you second chances, like I hope you'd give me. And that I know life is difficult sometimes, you know, and I think you know that I'm sorry for any complicated baggage I've given you. But that, you know, that I agree with Grampy that I hope you know that I always know that you were loved, you know, and that, you know, I have the best intentions for you. I'm always going to support you if I can. But I guess I want you to know that I think I always worried about this because Grampy always said with Grammy, because she was an only child and they really spoiled her a lot, that she didn't have a lot of confidence and she never had to do things because they did things for her. And so I want you to feel like even though I overprotect you sometimes, it's not that I don't believe in you. I know you can do these things, and I hope you have confidence. I just always wanted your life to be a little bit easier if I could help. But I definitely didn't want you to get the impression, like, even if I'm not around, I know you can handle things, you know? And you have God on your side, and I hope you know these things.
All right. How would you like to be remembered?
Wow. I think, you know, stuff that I've been doing for my 50th year this year, that's kind of how I would like to be remembered. Like somebody who is a spiritual person who doesn't really care about a Catholic label. I'm more concerned about a Christian label. That I'm a child of God, you know, and, that I want to put others first when I can. That's why I shave my head. That's why I did the Feed My Starving Children for my birthday. I would like people to remember that I tried to be a good teacher. You know, I always feel like I'm my own worst critic. And then I feel like I never feel like satisfied. Like I always keep trying to do better because I have a tough group of students, you know, and I think I'm at a disadvantage because I grew up in the suburbs, and because I'm a white lady, an older white lady, I'm like their grandma's age, it makes it really hard sometimes because I think it goes both ways. Like sometimes they can prejudge me, and sometimes I have a lot to learn because I didn't grow up in the city, you know, and I really try, but it's tough. So I feel like I want to be remembered as a teacher who cared and who kept trying to improve for the sake of her students. I wish I could be remembered as, you know, somebody who had a successful marriage, but
hey.
But I'm, you know, I just have to be remembered as somebody who just tried to do the best with her relationship as possible. And we'll see about that. I used to dream of, like, being a, you know, helping people with their pre-Cana marriage counseling classes, but that was definitely not in the cards. I don't know. So I just want to be remembered as somebody who was caring and funny and loving and an animal lover and people lover, and I love working with people with disabilities, and I appreciate diversity. Hopefully I don't want to be remembered as somebody that was too set in their ways. I like to be open-minded, you know, and growing. Oh, somebody who always tried to be growing and learning. You know, curious.
I think you're just a big lovey-dovey who trusts everybody in this.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. What was I like when I was a youngling?
Oh, my gosh. What were you like when you were little? Oh, God, you were such a joy. Well, I've got a whole book here, you know, where I would just write down all the funny, clever things you would say, like clever, pull the lever, you know, all your little smart, little funny little things. You were always like one step ahead of me and always surprising me. You had a great imagination. You were very verbal. I knew you were smarter than me, which was scary. I could tell.
Yeah, no, I'm kidding. You're sweet.
Yeah. I mean, it was hard for you, I think, because you were an only child, so you would make me play with you and stuff. And I was always, always, like, trying to get you into Kinder music or, you know, playing with other kids or bringing over to Uncle Brian's to play with your cousins. Because I always felt bad that you had no litter mates.
You did a good job with all that. You should have got me a dog room. Come on, room.
Yeah, so, yeah, you were, when you were really little, you just were not a good sleeper, though. You just were a catnapper. You could sleep for 15 minutes, and then you'd be ready to go for another 4 hours, and I would cry, like, this kid never sleeps. You had a lot of energy. You know, you were really good with all your toys, figuring them out, and finding new purposes for them. And you were a joy.
No.
Yeah.
All right. What were the hardest moments raising me when I grew up? When I was growing up, sorry. And I feel like the answer to this might be, you know, overprotective over here. Just being a little worried about it.
I think the hardest moments were when you had your foot, your nerve, your leg.
Oh, yeah. That messed you up.
Well, because we didn't know what it was, and that was very scary. And I just think any time you were sick was really hard. I always just wanted to take it away from you.
Yeah.
And then I just think, you know, the hardest moments were just, like, you know, dysfunction in the family that I wish, you know, you didn't have to deal with. Because those are really complicated, and, you know, going to the counselors and stuff. Doing the best I can, but, like, still thinking things are hard.
Next question. Can't get the paper here. Is there something about me that you've always wanted to know but have never asked?
That's a hard one when you have a teenage daughter.
Can I go back? Wanna wait? Wanna think on it?
No. I just think I don't want to invade your privacy. I feel like if you wanted to tell me things, you should just tell me. I shouldn't ask you, because especially at this age, like, you have to have your secrets. You have to be comfortable. Like, you can't be like, hey, I want you to tell me this. Blah. Like, you're not at the age where that is a good thing to
do. Look at you respecting my privacy.
I try.
Thank you, Mom.
Okay.
All right. If this was our last conversation, what would you want to say to me?
Oh, please, I'd be crying.
Yeah.
What is that birthday card that Grammy and Grandpa just got that you said I should just put?
Oh, yeah.
That's it. What did it say?
Yeah, it was talking about, like, it was a card for this one over here, this lovely mother, and it was all about, like, oh, you're so smart, and you're so kind and loving and all this stuff, and, like, I was reading and I heard her in a dramatic voice, and, like, when I read the card, I told her that I felt like this was the kind of card that she could have gotten me for my birthday, and then she thought the same thing.
I was thinking the same thing. I could just cross out my name, and this would be the perfect card for Grace.
We're not the same person, but, like, we're pretty similar. We're pretty close.
But I think the things that I'm proud of in you, that's kind of the similar things that Grammy and Grampy are proud of in us, too.
Yeah.
So what was the question?
Oh, it was if this is our last conversation, what would you want to tell me?
Again, I would say, you know, put Jesus first, even though it's hard and the world sabotages it. That I feel like I'd always be there for you, that I would be like your guardian angel watching over you, you know, and I do have faith in you that you don't need me because I've raised you, you know, and technically you don't need me to be here. It's just a bonus time.
Oh.
And that I'm very proud of you and that I love you very much. No, I have no regrets.
I think I'm almost done with all the questions I picked for you. Shoot. How has your life been different than what you imagined?
That's a tough one. Well, just to be honest, like, I did imagine, like I said, that, you know, that, you know, when kind of when you grow up with two siblings, you know, you just kind of assume that you love kids and you're going to have a lot of kids. But it wasn't in the cards for me, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I just imagined I would have, like, at least three kids like my parents had, you know, and you just can't assume something like that. So I think part of it was because I got so much education, you know, people can't assume, you know, those eggs aren't getting any younger in there, you know, and you get your education first, and then Daddy hurt his shoulder, that other shoulder, and he was out of commission for a year, right? Out of commission.
And your husband might not let you go adopt some kiddos.
Right, we didn't agree on adoption. Yeah. I love and trust that God would send us the baby we wanted, and I was surprised because Daddy's brother is adopted, and I just assumed he would be all for it, and he totally wasn't. He, like, surprised me again with his strange views on things. He was like, well, they could have fetal alcohol syndrome. I'm like, okay? Like, I'm sure not all the children up for adoption, and even if they do, like, I don't know.
You don't love them anyways. Yeah.
Right. So we didn't agree, and he just kind of felt like whatever, we were just destined to have one, and we should be happy with that. And
ew.
You can't force somebody to have more children if they don't want to. So I do, you know, I'm like, well, at least I have, you know, my students and I can love, but it was not what I expected, but I think that's just, you know, something I don't have any control over.
Hey, I get to hug all of the mom over here. Get a finesse all your love.
You know, and then I'd have people who try to make me feel better, and they'd say things like, I have a sister, and we can't stand each other because I used to feel bad for you that you weren't going to have any siblings. They're like, it's no guarantee. They're like, oh, I wish I was an only child, you know. So people have funny ways to try to make you feel better. And I also wonder, like, I would like to do more traveling, and hopefully I still will, because I feel like you learn so much when you travel, and we're so painfully Midwestern. Like, I really want to.
Where would you want to go?
Anywhere. I'd go anywhere.
Would you want to go to Japan?
Yes. I just feel like it's cool to meet other people and see other cultures, and I never forget anywhere that I travel. So I've been to Switzerland was my first trip abroad. So then when we were there, we took a sleeping car to Venice, and then we also went to Lyon, France. So we went all around. Then the next time I traveled with my Northern Illinois Alumni Association, we went to Rome and Florence. That was amazing. And then I went with the Curie High School kids to London. And you know how I love that, the culture palooza. I want to take you to London. And my parents, you know, tried to take us a lot of places in the States, camping and out west. And to Canada we went one time. And then when we went to see my cousin Lenore get married, we went down to Mexico while we were in San Diego. And I just feel like everywhere you go, it's very educational. And I never regret it.
Yeah. I'm sure you should have, like, stopped in from America. Like, I've been glad anywhere. We didn't do that.
Yeah.
All right. Can you remember, like, what is your earliest memory?
Oh, that's a good question. Early memory. I do remember, this is a bad story, preschool. I do remember we had, like, show and tell at preschool, and one of the kids brought this tiny little plastic beer mug, and it had like a frothy foam, fake foam on it, and I really liked it, and so I took it.
Oh no.
And then I felt so guilty and was going to try to bring it back. I don't remember if I did bring it back, but like one of my early memories is, what a good Catholic kid, already involved guilt.
You want to hear my Catholic preschool stories?
Sure.
I have two. One was...
You didn't go to a Catholic preschool.
No, like I'm a Catholic girl and such. No, one Ms. was Leah. I was afraid of the bathroom because you had to, like, push through one door and then another door
that
to get into the bathroom.
That bathroom was kind of creepy.
And the first floor bathroom makes weird noises sometimes, you know. And so what I would do every day as, like, a preschooler, because I would just wait, like, because it was only half day, you know. I wait until the day was over to go to the bathroom at grandma's house. And, like, one day I really had to go, and I was, like, really, really afraid of the bathroom. And I'm like, oh, I can just hold it. No, that didn't go well.
Aww.
And then the other time, there's just, like, really random, like, preschool memories from here and there that I remember.
Yeah, because you can't remember all of it.
I don't think I've ever, like, directly stolen anything from anyone, but I do steal stuff off the floor. I will say that.
Don't steal stuff off the floor. You're not in preschool anymore. I just want to say, one time, Miss Leah, I don't know how I was off of work, but she said we could come and observe your preschool anytime we wanted. And so, of course, I did. But she didn't know I was there yet, and I was, like, hovering at the door, and she really legitimately didn't know I was there. And she was talking to you guys, and she was like, oh, Miss Leah loves you. And I was like, oh, I was in heaven. Like, you had a teacher that loved you guys, you know? She wasn't even doing it because she knew I was there.
I punched some kid in the face at preschool.
Well, that's not a good memory. Why? What did they do? Which kid? Do you know?
Long story.
I remember also in preschool, I brought a little metal lunchbox and whatever water I had in the thermos leaked out and got all my snack all wet, and I was so sad because I thought, here I am with my big lunchbox.
Oh.
And I remember when I was little, I used to play priest. I used to think, I was so little I didn't realize I couldn't be a priest because I'm not a guy, and I would have these plastic circles. They were different colored plastic, and they had four notches in them, and you would use them to build. But they were perfectly round, and I would use those as my hosts. I would put on, like, a white top, and I would say Mass in my basement. And I didn't realize, you know, nobody told me yet, you know, you can't be a priest, girl.
Hey, it's the 21st century. You can go be a Lutheran priest now. I don't have any more questions.
Well, let's see what other ones are good.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We can pick one. Look at that, lovely options. Oh, I'll read this one. Let's see.
What were my parents like? You want to hear that one?
Yeah.
Okay, so what were my parents like? Well, my mom was an only child. She grew up in Morton Grove, all her cousins lived in the city, but then my grandpa, he had his own business, and he wanted to move to the suburbs, and he built his own house out in Morton Grove when it was, like, there weren't a lot of houses there yet. But then again, you know, because my mom lost her mom pretty young. And I think she was kind of naive because she was they were pretty overprotective with her. And again, you know, she had some issues. It was really hard for her to lose her mother. And then she wasn't too happy that Grandpa got married about a year later. That was tough to swallow. You know. I kind of went through that a little bit when Uncle Nick got remarried. It's just, I love Lucy, but it's just tough, you know, to have people move on. And then Grandpa here, your Grampy, he was the baby. He was like the bad one. I remember when we went down to New Orleans, he hadn't seen one of his aunts in a long time, and she was like, "Oh, Bobby, are you still bad?" Because he was always the feisty, rebellious one, so Uncle Joe was like the perfect, you know,
it's pretty boy. Grampy was feisty.
Oh, yes. He was definitely the feisty one. Mm-hmm. And then Aunt Rose was the girl in the middle, and then Grampy. And I don't know. I feel like, if you know, you can relate to Uncle Brian similarly. Like, Uncle Brian, he didn't, like, love school that much, but he's very social and he's good relationally, and so, like, funny, like, you can have all kinds of book smarts, and he'd say, like, you all can have book smarts, but I have street smarts. I feel like he got that from Grampy. Like, Grampy is always very funny and really, like, understands how the world works and knows how to negotiate and get people to do a win-win, and I think Brian has similar things. Like, I could get all the straight A's I want, but Brian is still always going to be more successful in terms of, you know, what he does in marketing, and his social skills have really served him very well. And you can't teach somebody that. So, you know, it's kind of interesting. So, and as always, as you can see in this cartoon here from caricature of my parents from Navy Pier,
yes.
When you look at Grampy, what does he look like?
Oh, he is in love with Grampy.
He's
okay.
Totally over the moon. And she's not even looking at him. She's probably looking at some chocolate off
the camera.
Right. I'm like, how did that caricature artist totally, perfectly draw them, you know? Like, Grampy was always crazy about her, and she told me that her mom always taught her to leave the men, keep the men guessing, you know?
They
keep them guessing!
Other,
yeah. Yeah, they do love each other, though. I think they were just really young when they got married, and it was hard, and they loved having a family, and we always had our dog growing up, Angel, and we did a lot with our church and camping and you know, every holidays we'd spend with Uncle Joe and Aunt Karen and the boys in Lake Geneva, and we did a lot with the Kaufmans too. They were like the campuses are even more like cousins and god cousins, you know. So I don't know. I think they kind of balance each other out. Like, Grampy's very social and Grammy was more shy a little bit with getting into relationships, so it would help, like, Grampy would break the ice and, like, have an easy time of making friendships, and that would help Grammy.
And once Grampy goes to bed, you'll be talking with Grammy for the next 5 hours.
You know, so I think my parents, you know, did the best they could, and they really, they went, moved to the suburbs because they thought we'd have a better education. Took us to church, and they were very involved in the church. My dad was parish council president. He was in the choir. He helped with confirmation classes. You know, just like stuff like Uncle Gary does now. And Uncle Brian, too, is very involved, especially in his school board. So we kind of get that. Actually, my cousin Lenore was just joking at my 50th. She was like, oh, you Sir Niggs, you're overachievers. She's like, look at, you know, Brian on the school board and Gary getting the new job and Beth with too much education. She was like teasing us. But I think we really do get a lot of that from my dad. You know, kind of a drive to succeed, whatever that means, right? What?
I'm petting my gray.
Petting my fuzzy hair.
Oh, by the way, Mom's pretty old now. She's almost 50. That's right, though.
I got my St. Baldrick's hair coming in.
Yeah.
All right, what other good questions are there?
You got all the questions over there. Which one?
Well,
those are
I always say, like, what were some of the good ones like? What advice would you wish you could give to yourself when you were younger, right?
What advice would you wish you could give to yourself when you were younger?
What advice would I have given to myself when I was younger? I don't know, that's hard, because I feel like you're always going to make mistakes anyway, but I think it would be like, I don't know, that's really hard.
I'm terrible. I'm thinking of something pretty edgy.
Well, I was thinking, like, you know, I would give the advice to my parents, okay, which was, they kind of took, a lot of parents, I think, make this mistake. They think once you're in high school that they, yes, that they're kind of done, and they kind of took their eye off the ball, which was a mistake, and they would do things like have a fully stocked bar that they did not take inventory of, you know, and when the cat's away, that's why Mommy doesn't drink, because in high school, they'd be like, oh, here's a bottle of vodka. I'll bring it this weekend to the drive-in because Grandma and Grandpa won't notice that it's gone. Not good, right? You know, some kids go away to college and
hey,
go crazy.
You turned me into a bartender. You can't talk.
I taught her to make my pomegranate orange holiday cocktail this year. No, but, you know, I've really always tried to be with you, like, if you want to taste it, if you want to try it at home or in the safety with your family, I don't want you to feel like it's taboo and, ooh, like it like bared with sugar.
Yeah.
Okay, I want you to know that people can do it responsibly and just like have a toast at New Year's Eve. You don't have to go crazy, because I would go away to college and kids are finally free, right? And they would just go crazy. So my advice to myself would have been, like, don't take advantage of your parents because they're not watching you.
Yeah.
But I don't think I would have followed that because they weren't watching.
Yeah.
And I'm watching. And I want you to always be able to blame it on me, say, oh, I'm sorry, I got to go, or my mom's making me come home, or
yeah.
I always have that policy. I like that. In my high school, they had us sign a contract with our parents that if you're ever feeling uncomfortable,
you
just,
gotta
yeet
out
of
there.
No questions asked.
Yeah.
You're not in trouble, just come get me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a free pass. You know? But I always agree with my dad, like, as long as you tell the truth, you know, it's going to be so much easier on you than if you lie and make it worse, because it's really hard to get the trust back. And I want to tell you another good lesson.
Huh.
So I was doing a lot of babysitting in the neighborhood, and my friend Heather was going to have a sleepover party,
mm-hmm.
but I had already committed to babysit for the Kellys down the street. And so then, you know what I did. I was like, oh, sorry, Kellys. And my dad was like, uh-uh. My dad always taught me the right thing. He was like, nope, you committed to the Kellys. You are not going to the party. And at the time, I was so mad at my dad. And, oh, everybody was going to be at the party. And, oh, you know, and now I know, I look back, and I was like, he was totally right. He did it was a harder thing to do, but he taught me the right thing. You don't just flake when you made a commitment. And they were a nice family, and you don't want to just, like, leave them in the lurch to find a babysitter. It's like, if you make a commitment, you have to stick to it. You know, my dad was always teaching me good lessons like that, which I hope I teach you sometimes, too. What do you think is the best lesson I ever taught you?
Christianity. We have a few seconds left, so.
Will it stop?
Yeah. I guess we're closing then.
I don't think it'll
stop. See you later.